Do send in your questions, wisdom, observation, experiences for our parenting segment today. We're talking about language development in the first 1,000 days and how to best help right across the village. And it takes a village is, of course, the title of our parenting segment. How to help children become great communicators in the first crucial years of a child's life. A baby's brain doubles in size in their first year of life and will be 4/5 the size of an adult brain by the third birthday. In those first 1,000 days, 80% of neural connections will be made. Our guest is the speech and language therapist Emma Quigan, who says the language environment babies experience makes all the difference to their development during this period of tremendous growth. Emma, who is Ngāi Tahu, is co-president of the Speech and Language Therapists Association. She teaches at Massey University and is co-founder of Talking Matters, which partners with whānau, communities, practitioners, iwi and government to build and support language-rich environments for children. Tēnā koe, Emma. Welcome to 9 to Noon. Thanks for your time.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me today.
It's such an incredible time of human development. Everyone focuses on the first 1,000 days and, of course, language in the beginning of language as part of communication, so pivotal as well. Just recap on the incredible changes in the human brain in those first 1,000 days.
Well, you captured it so well. So much is happening constantly. And when we think about the number of brain cells that are developing and the myelination, so that's like that insulation stuff that goes over each of the synapses, so the highway of passing information on, that can sound kind of heady. And you think, oh, well, what does that mean in everyday contexts? It means that a day's work for a baby, playing, looking around at things, singing songs, it's probably the equivalent to the hardest day's work us as adults would ever have in our lives. When you think about what's happening to them on a minute level, every time they have an interaction, it's actually meaning something for how their brain is growing. Every time they look at a book, it's actually growing new brain cells. So sometimes it helps for us to just bring it back down to earth and think, so what does that mean for these babies and toddlers right in front of us right now?
And that beautiful initial connection, watching parent to child or carer to child, and just watching that facial interaction, they mirror, of course, this is how they begin to learn everything about human connection and human communication. It's such a beautiful thing to watch it happening.
It is. It's just gorgeous. It can bring tears to your eyes when you see just, you almost can see what's going on inside. So it's not just learning. It's that, like you say, the connection, the love that's growing and developing. So, yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's so cool as well to hear you explain this, because not long ago when Alison Sutton and myself were setting up Talking Matters, which is still growing strong today, it did feel like news to people. And they were saying, oh, so what? Like, what's actually happening with babies? I thought they were just, you know, you needed to keep them alive by feeding them and make sure they're okay. But today it is much more known and understood how much a baby is learning in this time. So it's really heartening to see that.
Yeah. Look, it's so instinctive often when you will watch that parent-to-child communication again and all the goo-gooing and the babbling. And you'll often see the infant staring at carer's lips and just literally watching. The other thing I love about babies in particular is the way they seem to have about 100 different emotional expressions within 30 seconds. You know, they're smiling 1 minute, then they're frowning, then they're laughing, and then and it's kind of an insight into all that is going on within that remarkable brain. Shall we talk with early communication then, as we develop language skills, what really does matter? And is all that babbling and sort of baby talk and silly talk really matter, not only for bonding, but for the infant to begin to understand human communication?
It does. It does matter. And if we start with thinking about that concept of trust of our babies, and when I say our babies, I really like the title that you guys have of your show, It Takes a Village, because when we think about the wider whānau, the wider community, the wider context, they are our children. They're going to be our future leaders, our future friends, colleagues, everything. So we need to trust that our babies are listening to us and taking things in. And if we start with that place of trust, we are seeing the mana of that baby, as every baby is born with mana. It's not something they earn, they have it. And if we trust our babies, we're seeing their humanity. We're seeing them as a person with likes, dislikes, not someone that needs to be filled up with knowledge, but that it's already there and we're walking alongside them to help it unfurl and providing those opportunities. So yeah, if we start with trust, we do start to see children quite differently, don't we? Trust that they're able to learn, that they are learning.
One of the most amazing interviews I think I ever had was with, I've got the words just gone out of my head now, an anthropologist, and she explained why babies will smile, and you know, that absolutely infectious light up a room smile, often to a complete stranger or, you know, in the street. And they have a sense that they need to connect, not just with the primary caregiver, and we know that attachment is so important, but they need to connect with everybody in their world because they know they need help, right? They're the best at forming new relationships and reaching out to form new relationships. And that smile and that cute projection is a part of reaching out to connect. So we're not.
Yeah, you're
just
quite right. And they're not doing it. I mean, people used to say those early smiles were wind.
Were wind, exactly.
You might have heard it before. Oh, you know, they're windy. It's not a real smile. But we actually do know that they are trying to seek connection. So that tells us something about how smart babies actually are. They're able to have that control to go, hey, look at me, talk to me, interact with me.
It also speaks to all of us, though, that when we all interact with that infant, and, you know, we need to do it respectfully. We don't want to be winding someone up just before sleep because it's fun for us. But when we interact with that baby and we respond to that baby and make eye contact, we're actually collectively helping build that communication skill, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And even not winding up, if we start to look at the cues that babies give us, they'll actually tell us when they need a break as well. You know, when a baby sort of looks away for a moment, that's them communicating to us, I'm going to take five. It's too much. So when we really pay attention, they're able to get what they need if we notice. So sometimes it is flipping some of our old assumptions. And these are like the colonial assumptions in New Zealand. If we look from a Māori perspective, pre-colonization, we've been doing this for 1,000 years at least in terms of noticing what babies learn, paying attention, responding to their cues, and seeing them as inherently part of society, not people to be ferried around from place to place and put it in the corner, but actually part of society. So, yeah.
What are some of those cues? So we've talked about trust. Now we're talking about noticing, because this communication is two-way. It's not you to baby or me to child. It is two-way. So what are we looking for in those cues? And let's stay with infants. We'll work through those first 1,000 days, but let's stay with quite young babies. And just pick up on that theme of what we're looking for, what cues we need to receive.
So there's some of the obvious ones, like babbling. It's really easy to see they're making a noise and you think, oh, you're telling me things. But some of the more subtle cues with really small babies might be their eye gaze. So where they're looking, that's telling us something of what they're interested in. So of course we can respond to that by describing it, by bringing it over to them, by starting an interaction about their interests. It might be when they're getting a bit older, more around say 9 months or so, they might start pointing. That pointing is them inviting you into their world and saying, hey, look, I've noticed this balloon up in the sky. I have noticed that cup of coffee you're drinking. Sometimes people go, oh, well, then what do I say to that? Just anything, like we would with another adult or another person. They've invited you in. They've used all the skills at their disposal, pointing, eye contact, maybe a giggle. So we use what skills we've got. We might laugh back. We might point as well. We might describe it for them. Also, around that time, it might be that infants start passing us objects. Again, that's their way of inviting us in. Hey, you have a turn. We know that children start to pass their chewed up crackers and things around that age. And sometimes we think, ugh, I don't want this. And I see, you know, friends say, oh, ta, and then put the cracker down. But actually, if we can take a moment, we can't all the time because we do have busy lives, but if we can take a moment to describe that cracker, say thank you, talk about what they're eating, because we are acknowledging that baby has said, hey, do you want a bite? Well, have a look at what I've got. That is their way of communicating. And like you said earlier, communication goes both ways. It's not a single hand thing. It's not something we do to babies. It's something we do with babies. We communicate with them.
So
of course, as they get
Yeah.
Yeah.
Notice and respond, right? And this is the response that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's that simple. Notice what they're interested in and respond to them. It's the basics for human relationships with anyone. And we're quite good at doing it with our peers, so we can do it with babies. We notice what people we care about are interested in, and we respond to them. So let's do the same to babies.
You mentioned that we're busy, and often in our modern lives and in our society, or parts of our society anyway, it's become very individualised. It might be one carer. Right. At any given point in time, it might be one carer primarily the whole time. And we've lost, many of us, that sense of connection, or we just don't have the people around us every day to share the load. What is your message? Find those people, right? Because it's not just sharing the load of caring, it's the stimulus that having a variety of people around can bring for baby or for a young child. There are many benefits to trying to find and build that community.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I'd say, Catherine, we've all got a part to play with this in terms of what kind of society we want to create. If we want our children to be great communicators, we need to be open for those spaces. So have spaces that babies and toddlers are welcome to be in, and include them in those conversations. So I often say to the students at Massey that I teach, we've got to stop thinking about giving strategies and supports just to mum. Is so often, you know, when there's any kind of support for a child, oh, well, the parents can do this. And it often falls on mum. You can read to them. You can play with the baby. You can try this activity. And it's actually so much just for one person. And one person can't be everything to another person. So it does mean thinking about wider context, wider whānau, and making spaces available where people can interact with the baby and it being normalised. So not, you know, I guess, what does that mean for your everyday person? If you're at the supermarket and in the queue, you've got a baby cooing and babbling to you and trying to play peekaboo, joining in for a moment, you might not know that baby, but actually you're lighting up their brain cells then. You're giving that mum or dad a break for 5 minutes, and you're actually sending a message to that child that they are welcome in this space, that their voice is heard, and that they are noticed. And what better message could we be sending to our children?
You're so right. It's all those opportunities, and it's also fun. That's something else. It feels really good. Like human connections and moments of special connection. They're to be treasured, you know, not to stick I've got so many emailers coming in already saying, put down the mobile phones. And that is a story for all of us, right? It's not just, you know, parents who might be at a sports event or something and trying to save up some time. All of us, put down the damn phone and engage with the humans around us, and particularly the little humans around us. And I think you're alluding also to this idea that, you know, people are often embarrassed or ashamed if they're, I don't know, they're in a shop or at a cafe or somewhere public and baby is crying, or, you know, toddler is crying. Like, that's normal. There's no need to sort of run away and hide. I understand why people might feel that. We need to make that normal, and we need to be the distraction. The person standing next to them in the queue who makes a face and distracts toddler. And I went past a little kid the other day who fell off his skateboard, bless him, he was having a big cry. And I just, you know, I said, oh, what a flash board. How good are you? You know, and I don't feel embarrassed about doing that. But we need to make, back to your point, we need to notice.
Yeah. Well, every moment like that adds up. And, you know, I often get asked in my various roles, well, what do parents need to do to create confident communicators? It is simple stuff like what we're talking about. And every single person in Aotearoa plays a part. And if we could all see that, you know, not glaring at the person at the cafe who's got a crying baby and thinking, yep, well, that toddler's having a meltdown because that's how they communicate and that's the skills they've got right now and they're communicating something. So I'll save that nasty glare and not look at them. Actually, by doing that, if everyone's starting to think those ways, we are creating language-rich environments for our children. We're creating the opportunity to use the skills you have and the opportunity to add and extend their thinking. So that conversation you had with that little boy with the skateboard, it all adds up. And actually, when we realise how simple it is to be able to communicate with children and that It's the cumulative experience of words, gestures, waiata, song, that all adds up. It's not that hard for us to do our bit.
Reading and the time to read, for some people the confidence to read, for the fact that many of us have migrated on to doing things visually. We all do it. If I'm wanting to find out something, how to fix something now, I don't read about it. I get up a YouTube video. But to encourage reading, and that early reading, of course, is again about primarily what? It's about connection. And
experience.
Where do we seek the richest and the most ways we can bring reading into young ones' lives?
Well, we've talked a lot this morning already about normalization. So it is normalizing sharing a book. And I think sometimes messages get to parents of it's so important to read with your baby and things like that. And they might have this impression of a well-behaved child sitting on their lap consuming a story, when we know in reality that that might not happen until the kid's 3 or 4. And for some children, they won't do that. So to know that 30 seconds of looking at a book, opening up the title page, saying a few things and closing it, or bub turning a few pages and you providing some commentary, is actually exposure to reading. And those are the skills that babies need. Every time they've actually interacted with the object itself, opened the book, closed it, you might even be just saying, open, shut, that's all adding up. And I think parents need to have it affirmed that that's okay. And perhaps you won't get through the book and don't feel like you need to.
It's often the worst things we do when we're reading with youngsters is be determined to read every word and turn the page now. They want to go backwards. They want to look at the last picture and think about what that was.
I mean, it's like building a tower of blocks. We can get so obsessed with completing the task and then think, hold on, why are we doing? We're actually wanting to have a nice time with our children, not build the tower. So
that's not going there, it's going here. I'm the grown-up, I decide. It occurs to me also there's a reason why books are often hard when they're for infants. They're meant to be chewed, probably, aren't they?
Absolutely, and going with
it. Well, that's a very instinctive thing for any infant to do, is to put something in their mouth. You mentioned waiata, and actually a lot of other wisdom coming in here from people talking, singing, counting, the rhythm of language and the rhythm of singing. I mean, all those silly songs in the car as well. Whatever the context, there is a really powerful rhythmic learning of language that happens with waiata, with song, with nonsense rhymes. Kids are learning from that.
Mm-hmm. And we don't want to dumb it down. Sometimes people think, oh, well, what's an appropriate song or waiata to sing to baby? If we look back again, pre-colonial Aotearoa, some of the most complex language through oriori, so sometimes that's translated to lullaby, but it's actually more complicated than that. It is sharing information about where you're from, so your whakapapa. That was shared to babies in utero before they were even born, because there was the inherent understanding that through the rhythm, like you're saying, and through those words and the repetition, that you're giving that child a sense of who they are, where they're from, who they might be, before they even enter this world. In terms of some waiata that shares stories of who we are, things that have been, the more they're shared with baby, they will pick up on those words. So we don't need to always make things so simple. It is actually going back to that concept of trust and noticing and providing that opportunity. So I think that's helpful for parents who go, I'm not that into nursery rhymes, or I don't want to sing Old MacDonald. You don't have to. You really don't. Like, actually, your favourite song, sharing that with your baby, is probably going to have far more of an impact than doing something that you think you have to do.
Now, that's really insightful because of the meaning that's there, right? Because it matters to you, and that in itself gets communicated, right?
Yeah. I mean, we often talk about how children need to hear a new vocabulary and new words multiple times before they'll use it. But I'm not about to cuss on RNZ, so I won't say these swear words. We all know them. But we know that a child might need to hear the F word once or twice and suddenly use it. So let's explore why that may be. I mean, it might have been the perfect word used with such gusto at that moment. and observing those reactions from everyone around them, kids are pretty quick to pick that up. You could even be 2 years old and think, hey, I'm going to use that word. So it's the meaning and intention. If we're sharing something with meaning, children will pick it up. If you're sharing a song with love because you love it and you're enjoying it, your kids are far more likely to engage with it. If you're doing it because you have to. So then if you're being told, sit down and play trains, and you actually hate trains, just don't. There might be someone else in your family who likes doing it, or the neighbor or a friend. They can, babies can tell if you don't want to be there or don't want to be doing something from a very young age, from a matter of months. They can tell if you don't want to be there. So don't feel pressured to do something to grow their language or grow their brain, because actually you being in a position where you want to be there, saying things you want to say, will make more of a difference.
Miki nui, Emma. Come back again. Thanks for your time. Emma Quiggin is co-president of the Speech and Language Therapists Association, teaches at Massey University, co-founder of Talking Matters. Thanks for some of your own wisdom, which has been coming in too.